Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week here. And, boy, it just feels like I just came back from the weekend. And, of course, I'm jokingly referring to the fact that the last 2 days we had repeat shows without any advance notice. And the reason for that is, as longtime listeners are well aware, I actually do have a day job that I work at when time permits, or actually when I need to pay the bills around here. And unexpectedly, over the weekend, I got called to work on a project. I guess I can tell you what it is, because it's in all the newspapers. It's not a big secret. They're doing a pilot. They're trying to bring back the Hawaii Five-0 TV series. It's an updated new version for CBS, and they're shooting the pilot episode right now, and it will go to CBS in April, and CBS will decide whether or not they want to proceed with bringing the series back on a regular basis, and this will sort of fill in that huge hole that's being left in our local film community from Lost, which is just now prepping and shooting its final series episode, the grand finale, where all the questions are solved and so forth and so on. And a very, very good friend of mine is doing visual effects on the show and had a personal emergency. So he calls me and says, Mike, I need you to cover. And, of course, that's what friends are for. And so I stepped in for a couple of days, and I may be called back again for another couple of days over the next week. Basically, we've got 2 more weeks of filming on this thing. And it's one of those situations where you may not know that you're working until the night before, where you get a phone call and a call sheet, and they say, we need you on the set because, you know, that's how these things work. And it's getting a lot of press coverage here in Hawaii. In fact, I actually got interviewed by the local KITV. Just walking back from lunch, he said, you, come over here. We need to ask you questions. And so there's like a lot of excitement about the possibility that we could get a new updated version of Hawaii Five-0 here on the islands. That's what I've been doing for the last 2 days. And I appreciate your patience in putting up with the fact that every once in a while I do have to do a repeat show here in order to go out and do the things that I do that actually pay the bills here. Like everybody else in America, you know, if you're not a Wall Street CEO, you're struggling just to make ends meet, and that's certainly true out here. Now, getting on to the regular content of the program, our phone number, of course, is 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Othman's in the control room, ready to answer your phone calls when you call in, get you on the show here. A lot of different things going on here today. It was kind of hard to pick out a story I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to lead off. This just came in from Fox Business News. I don't know why it was in Business News, but that's where it is. Apparently, the United States Department of Justice has been asked to regulate AIPAC as a foreign agent of the Israeli government. And, of course, this is an issue that a lot of people have been raising over the years. And the U.S. Department of Justice has been formally asked to regulate AIPAC as an agent of a foreign government. No big shock there. And there was a big case provided about, you know, the fact that AIPAC is a spinoff from an organization that's already required to register as the agent of a foreign government. We've got the AIPAC spy scandal and so forth and so on. And, of course, everybody's initial reaction is, yes, it's about time. And, you know, after humiliating Joe Biden and all the rest of this diplomatic row going on, and you don't get to call the president you, whatever they call him. And, you know, if you've seen that video, Feeling the Hate in Jerusalem, you know, without getting some kind of payback on the thing. All right. All of a sudden, I am suspicious. I mean, we know, we have seen for decades that Israel has an absolute lock on the U.S. government no matter what. And now, all of a sudden, we're seeing this public fraying of relations, so to speak, where, you know, all of a sudden Hillary, who is going to run against Obama in 2012, is now starting to talk tough. Then she turns around and says, well, we're really still all good friends. Joe Biden got snubbed. Then he turned around and says, well, we're still really good friends. And they're going through this whole song and dance, and it occurs to me what's going on. We've gotten this story over the weekend about how 400 bunker buster bombs have been shipped to Diego Garcia, from which they are a stealth bomber's flight away from targets inside Iran. And we know the U.S. has been pumping the case for a war in Iran. There have been a couple of attempts at coup d'etats that have fallen flat on their face. They're still trying to do that. And I think all of this public pretense that Israel and the U.S. are suffering some kind of a diplomatic crisis, I think it's a hoax. I think it is a complete fraud. I think the U.S. government is getting ready to attack Iran, and they're trying to create the illusion of a diplomatic split with Israel to give Israel deniability. We have documented how Israel was the cheerleader for the invasion of Iraq. We have documented how Israel has been, up to this point, the cheerleader for the war in Iran. You know, wherever Israel wants bombs to fall, the U.S. says, yes, master, and the bombs start falling. But the American people and the rest of the world have come to understand that the U.S. government is a slave to Israel's war ambitions. Whoever Israel doesn't like, the U.S. is sooner or later going to attack. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, wherever. If there's oil underneath and Muslims on top and Israel doesn't like them, they are in the crosshairs. So I think all of this public pretense of a diplomatic split is to give Israel political cover, so that after the U.S. starts dropping the bunker busters all over Iran's non-existent nuclear weapons program, Israel can say, hey, we had nothing to do with it. I mean, over this last weekend, Abe Foxman was out there saying, no, Israel has never asked America to fight its wars for it. No, you just trick us into it. Basically, Levant affair, attack on the USS Liberty, the fake radio transmitter in Tripoli that tricked Reagan into bombing Libya. But we've documented how AIPAC and other Israeli political action committees are constantly trying to basically goad America into war on people that Israel doesn't like. Because Israel, all by itself, unless it goes ahead and uses its nuclear arsenal, Israel is not a very effective military machine. They couldn't even whoop Lebanon last time they tried there. And Operation Cast Lead in Gaza, yeah, they killed a lot of Palestinians, but it was an absolute, complete public relations disaster. So Israel has ordered the U.S. to attack Iran for it, but they don't want to catch the blame for it from all of their neighbors in the Mideast. So I think that's the reason for all of a sudden this supposed fraying of relations between Israel and the United States. I think it's political theater. I've been saying it's political theater ever since Hillary came out and started talking tough about Israel. But I may have misunderstood the actual intent. I thought it was because Hillary's going to run against Obama in 2012, and she needed to look like she wasn't a big fan of Israel, because that's becoming a huge negative in the American political scene. If you're taking money from AIPAC and you're saluting that blue and white flag, that is going to cost you votes going into the election this year and 2012. But I think now the situation is that the U.S. is going to attack Iran, and they want to try and pretend to the world that Israel had nothing to do with it. It's nonsense. We all know who's really calling the shots here. But I think that's the reason for all this talk about making AIPAC register as the agent of a foreign government, the situation with Biden, so forth and so on. I think it is all political theater to give Israel deniability for the coming conflagration here. All right. Steve in Ontario, we've got about 45 seconds for the end of this segment, so why don't you start with what you want to talk about, and we'll take you through the commercial break into the next segment.
All right. You're already kind of touching on it a bit here with Israel and what's kind of going on. There seems to be a backlash against them in the mainstream media that I haven't seen in, like, forever. And with today's AP release of the story of the ACLU getting the document that says that Ashcroft, Tenet, and Rumsfeld basically were telling people to put the kibosh or, like, just don't really look too deep into 9/11, I'm almost getting the impression here that they're purposely letting out more 9/11 information than they ever have as well, and there's going to be this big blame. There's a big, huge distraction going on here right now, and I think they're going to use 9/11 as a big distraction as well to kind of...
I think Israel is using 9/11 to blackmail the U.S. government. We got to take a break here. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Stick with us, Steve. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're on the phone with Steve in Ontario. We're talking about the recently released document. It's been reported in Raw Story and a bunch of other places, where basically it outlines that the Bush administration literally told the official 9/11 investigation not to go into an examination of 9/11 itself. We've commented on this before, that the 9/11 investigation, which, by the way, doesn't even mention World Trade Center 7, because they couldn't explain it away, but the investigation was told by the White House to focus only on the security lapses that allowed 9/11 to happen. This is like ordering an official report on the sinking of the Titanic that says you're only allowed to look at the quality of the metal used in the hull. And you'd get a very nice official report saying, well, yes, in some ways the plating on the hull of the Titanic was deficient. And, of course, you would have no mention at all about the missing binoculars, Captain E.J. Smith going rock and roll full tilt boogie through a known ice field, various other situations that contributed to the disaster. The same with 9/11. This latest document is proof that the official investigation was constrained to only look at certain areas and forbidden to actually examine the events of 9/11 itself. Now, getting back to the issue of blackmail, I have said all along that the worst foreign policy mistake in the history of the United States of America was whoever thought that they could partner with Israel on 9/11 and not have Israel turn around and immediately blackmail the U.S. government with it. And observers have noted ever since 9/11 that Israel's demands on the United States have become more strident, more demanding, more unapologetic. Just right through the roof, the arrogance that Israel displays with our own government. So I think what's going on is the leakage of this document times out very nicely with this this political theater of a split between the U.S. and Israel, because I think what's going on behind the scenes is Israel is saying, attack Iran, go in there, make it look like it's your idea and protect us, or we'll blow the lid off of 9/11, and it will hurt you a lot more than it will hurt us. And I think that's kind of what's going on. Steve,
I mean, they're just, man, they're pulling out some big names here, though, like Ashcroft, Rumsfeld. I mean, they mentioned Cheney in here, Tenet. I mean, these are some big players that are, you would think that these guys are going to be a little bit upset about this, do you not?
That's the whole point. Israel is going to name names and get them into the press. It's a shot across the bow to all the power plays in the United States. Play ball with Israel or we will bring you down.
Wow. This is intense, especially with, I mean, you've got Jesse Ventura on The View lately. Mm-hmm. You've got all these, like the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, all the conferences, they got a big one coming up, 50 states. They're going to do lectures in 50 states all at once coming up mm-hmm. in the next week or so. I mean, this is really starting to bust open here, and I'm wondering if the momentum's just going to get so strong on it that, I mean, even if somebody wanted to put the brakes on it, I don't think they can anymore.
I agree. It's brinksmanship. It's absolute brinksmanship here. And, you know, the bottom line is, yeah, they're skirting so close to the edge. All it would take would be one hard piece of undeniable scientific evidence or one eyewitness, insider, whistleblower to come forward, and the whole thing would really start unraveling. As of the last non-corporate media polls, 84% of Americans do not believe the official story of 9/11. And, you know, it is really right to the edge there.
It is. The whole momentum is shifting right now. And I mean, I don't know if we'll never know the whole truth about it. But the curious
we won't. But the part that we need to know, we already know. We know the U.S. government lied to us. And that's all we need to. I don't need to waste time on any other minutia. I don't even need a new investigation. We know the U.S. government lied to us. And at that point, they ceased to be the legitimate government of this nation. And now we got to decide what we're going to do about it.
Yep, and I think it also will show that the media lied to us as well. And I think people are waking up to that. That's why your show and all the other alternative media, alternative blogs and sites are growing so quickly. People mm-hmm. just don't trust the mainstream media anymore, and they know they're being lied to.
Yeah, absolutely. There, we got to let you go here. The phone lines are loaded up here. We got a lot of people to get through. Dee in Minnesota, aloha, Dee. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a couple questions. This whole business with this diplomatic split with Israel, and then them putting those bunker buster bombs in that Diego's Island to get ready to attack Iran. If, as we say, if sentiment is growing against Israel and people taking money from AIPAC and all the like, you know, it's going to cost them votes. I know it'll cost mine, but if it costs others, why would this government be stupid enough to go out and attack Iran, which is well known to be going to be a disaster for everybody, us included, the whole world? I mean, that could send this whole country down the Al-Qaeda, so to speak. Why would they be that stupid?
Well, the stupidity has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact that's what their masters in Israel are ordering them to do. The instant they took that money from AIPAC, have you noticed that we have more politicians going to Israel than any other country? And a lot of people are saying, why is that? Well, they're going over there to make obeisance, and who knows, while they're there, maybe they allow themselves to get videotaped in a compromising situation. Because one thing about Israel is they won't back anybody that they cannot blackmail and guarantee control over. And so maybe part of the rite of passage to the upper levels of power in our society is you have to allow yourself to get videotaped with an underage kid or something like that. So Israel knows they can, you'll pardon the expression, trust you in the future. You know, or didn't you wonder why there are so many allegations of pedophilia and all these other, you know, very, very shocking crimes in the upper reaches of political power? It may not just be coincidence. It may be that the covert hidden power structure says that, you know, you're not going to rise above a certain level until we have got you by the short and curlies. And so why don't you come over here to Israel, and we'll set you up, you know, with whatever. And then once we've got film and videotape on you, we know we can trust you to do as you're told, and you're headed for the top levels of the American government. And this is all speculative, but blackmail is a recognized tool of international statecraft.
But then why is it that Israel wants, because America cannot sustain a third front war. Hitler couldn't even do it.
Israel could care less. Israel doesn't care.
But it's going to hurt Israel, too, because...
How?
It's, well, for one thing, we'll be bogged down in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, or
Why
Iran.
Would Israel care about that? Why
because
would Israel
that,
care about that?
Israel's going to be bogged down in there, too, and the Palestinians
no, they
are
going
to take that chance.
No, they won't. Every time Israel starts one of the war, these wars, they kick back. How many Israelis did you see in Iraq?
None.
Israel's goal is to get the Christians and the Muslims to kill each other off, or the Russians and the Americans to nuke each other and get out of the way so that Israel can control the Mideast with their nuclear weapons and economically exert its control over most of the rest of the world.
Well,
Israel doesn't care what happens to the United States of America any more than fleas care that the dog they happen to be chewing on dies. They'll just find another dog.
But then who's going to take over? Because they have no other allies besides that little island in Japan.
Oh, no. They've got France. They've got Italy. They've got everywhere that they've got a sympathetic, blackmailable leader. They'll just hop from America to another country. They do it over and over again. Dee, we got to let you go. When we come back, talking to Billy Bob and then Karen about the national strike. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Karen Tostado. And Karen, bring us up to date. How's the national strike going?
It is moving ahead, Michael Rivero, and I am very excited about it. I also just was able to get booked on a Saturday morning show following Birgitta from Iceland. And as a matter of fact, they're going to hold her over so that we'll be able to talk together. I've been able to Skype her, and she's on board as well, and really realizes that all of the people of the world need to rise up and stand against this global tyranny. So it's going to be interesting. I've also been contacted by a few other people from Europe who are on board and who are actively working at joining us and making their own movements over there. So I just want to plant the seeds in everyone's heads who are listening and their hearts. Imagine the power we would have if billions of us all across this globe withdrew support from our governments gone wild for four consecutive days. And just think of what that would do to the bankers.
that would definitely rattle their cage, and the bankers would go back to the government and scream, "You've got to protect us from the people." And unfortunately, that's what our government would tend to do. We're seeing all around the world, in Iceland, in Greece, in Thailand now, where the general population are just fed up. They don't understand under what principle the ordinary general population of a country may be taxed in order to bail out privately owned corporations and save them from their own stupidity. And that really is what it comes down to. And you need to remember, the fascist economic model, and this is according to Benito Mussolini, who we all know was an expert on fascism, and he basically said, profits are kept private. If you have a business and you make a lot of money, you get to keep it. But if you have a business and you lose a lot of money, the losses are socialized, transferred onto the ordinary people. That is a fascist economy. I still hear people who say, oh, Obama's going to turn us into a socialist nation. You wish. We went right past socialism so fast we couldn't even wave at it as it sped by. We have gone right from capitalism right into fascism, which Lenin predicted was going to be the case when capitalism failed. It inevitably would become fascistic because the corporations would simply buy the government to get the government to force the people to simply give them the last of their money to perpetuate their power and reign a little bit longer. We also know from history that a fascistic economy cannot survive very long. So the writing is on the wall for a collapse. One way or the other, it's going to happen. Now, I had another wrinkle I wanted to add into the justification for a national strike. And I know there's a lot of people who are not going to be able to actually stop work those days. And yes, they can go to the, they can like stay away from the stores. But the other thing you might want to think about doing is not filling out any government paperwork. And we know there's a huge, huge push right now. People don't want to fill out the census. They don't feel it's the government business. They just get a gut level response. They don't want to fill out paperwork. Census, tax forms, license, whatever. And you know something? It dawned on me that when you fill out any piece of government paperwork, I don't care how banal and benign it may seem, the instant you fill out a piece of government paperwork, you are granting that government legitimacy. You are basically admitting, I see you as the legal, valid government of me, and therefore I will conform to your expectations of paperwork. And I think one of the reasons we're seeing so much resistance to the census is I think people have come to understand at some level deep inside them that the U.S. government is no longer legitimate. They lost their legitimacy when they lied us into the war in Iraq. They've lost their legitimacy when they basically, you know, tell us the 16th Amendment is ratified, when they cannot prove that it is. And I think a lot of people are just saying, I don't want to fill out any more paperwork for a government I don't recognize as lawful for this nation. And so that may be something else to think about doing over the national strike, is just say, I'm not going to fill out any paperwork at all. You know, and that's the end of it.
Sure, that's a good idea. And I think that aside from fascism, it's actually capitalism. And we have to recognize that.
I love it, capitalism. Oh, my goodness.
Well, tonight we've got our conference call, so I want to encourage folks to get on there and to really help us out here, because if this succeeds, it's not about me out there talking to everybody. It's going to be about our voices loudly and clearly standing together and demanding accountability, because it is capitalism. We've been crapped on for generations. I mean, we really need to recognize that. They want extermination or enslavement. Those are the only two choices, and if you think that's an exaggeration, you really need to take 4 days off and be able to research that for yourself, and you'll be horrified.
Can I respond to that? Because what you're saying about enslavement, we've basically reached a situation where, you know, we talked about our whole economy coming out of the Federal Reserve is a giant pyramid scheme. It makes what Bernie Madoff with the loot did look like wrapping scotch tape backward around your fingers and grabbing quarters out of the collection plate at the church. And the reason it is because in order to keep the system working, an ever larger pool of new borrowers must be found in order to take out the loans that the Federal Reserve uses to justify the creation of brand new money with which the interest is paid on the old money. And as long as that bottom layer keeps spreading out more and more and more, the system will stay up. Well, now the system's in trouble because the baby boomers are retiring and that bottom layer of borrowers is drying up. Not only do we not have an expanding population coming in, people just don't want to borrow money anymore because they don't know how they're going to pay it back. So what do the corporations do? They go to the government to force you to put more money into the system to prop it up. Whether it is mandating health insurance, mandating Bluetooth headphones, mandating fees for this, raising taxes, the government borrowing on your behalf without your permission. That's what all these bailouts are. Trillions and trillions of dollars of loans the government takes out on your tab in order to keep the Federal Reserve System ticking on a little bit longer. But it cannot survive. No pyramid ever survives. We've had this one for almost 100 years. And I think a big message that we need to look at in terms of the national strike is people realizing it's going to collapse anyway. I don't want to go along for that final ride. Let me keep what little bit is left of my own money. And, of course, the corporations are saying, no, 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 this should all be ours. We need every last penny. We're fighting for our survival. And, of course, the problem is the corporations are fighting for their survival, are completely unconcerned about yours.
That's exactly right. And also, I'd like to point out, Michael, that what we agree to accept as valuable is just that, what we agree to accept. And we have an opportunity here to really recognize the fact that we can start over. We, the people within our communities, within our families, we can start again. We can agree to a different form of government entirely, as well as a different form of currency. It's up to us.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the bottom line is the Federal Reserve System was never authorized by the Constitution of the United States of America. The debasement of our currency that the Federal Reserve has committed is a death penalty crime under the Currency Act of 1792. The bankers and their lackeys in government are breaking U.S. law constantly every single day, just as Obama breaks U.S. law every time he sends another check of money to Israel, which is continuing even despite this public theater of a split between Israel and the U.S. They're still getting their checks on time.
And that's crazy. We are allowing over $1 billion a week, folks, to be used on murdering innocent civilians. Depleted uranium, phosphorus bombs. There's enough money to go around. And when we finally get that, when we, the people, millions of us, billions of us, all around the world really get that, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, they owe us money. It's our money that they've taken. There's enough money to go around, but it's in a small, dominant criminal minority, and they owe us big time, but they won't pay us until we come together and demand their accountability.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, because if it's one thing I've seen about the ultra, ultra rich people, they are capable of an intense amount of self-delusion. They'll convince themselves that this is the natural order of things, that they be rich and everybody else be poor, or wealth is the sign of God's favor, and they are the elect. Andrew Carnegie thought the rich were a completely separate species from the poor, and the poor were supposed to be there. I mean, you know, Jesus loves the poor. Why doesn't he make them rich? So forth and so on. Karen, hang on, we're going to take you a couple minutes into the next segment. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of hour number one. We're going to go back to the phones. Karen Tostado, give us phone numbers, access codes, and websites, please.
Okay. The phone number is 712-775-7200. And the access code is 431-669-pound. And, Michael, I'm supposed to tell you Dr. Deagle says hi. And I also just want to plant this quick seed. He has said that the biggest thing that the this dominant criminal minority is afraid of is a lack of control and not to be able to control what we see, what we think, and what we watch, especially if we turn off our televisions, will be really important, as well as this. For over a generation, for generations, they've been controlling us through fear and well-planned chaos. Order out of chaos. Now, just imagine what a big, huge ball of negative energy they've been putting out across the globe for centuries. It's about time that that came back home to roost. And they like to call themselves Illuminati, but I say let's really illuminate and expose exactly what they're doing, because they have nothing else in line for us but total, utter control, enslavement, and murder. And it's time we recognized that and stood together and said, no more, no more.
Yeah, it is time. You know, we've had this incredible technological revolution. And, I've commented many, many times before that all of history is a conflict between rulers who want to control what their population is thinking and what their population knows, and technological breakthroughs which change the dynamic of information flow. Going all the way back to when Ramses II was lying to his people about whooping the Hittites at Kadesh. Rulers lie to their people. And then every once in a while, there's a technological breakthrough. Cheap paper, for example. Printing, movable type printing. Then telegraph, then radio, then television. Now the internet, which is interactive on a scale that nobody's ever seen before. And it has fundamentally changed the way information flows through our society. Governmental structures are either going to evolve to deal with that new reality, or they must go extinct. I think that's what we're seeing here right now. I think we're at the dawn of a really tremendous revolution in the way in which humans govern themselves and manage their planet. And I don't think it's going to be this top-down structure, you know, of a globalist new world order with the United Nations running the planet, which is stupid. They can't even run Israel right now. I think we're going to see, if anything, the ultimate expression of a democracy, where we're going to see very large nation states go away, and it's going to be lots of little communities just taking care of themselves and telling big governments and big corporations, stay out of our borders. You know, you bring nothing but misery to us, and it's time to get rid of you. Karen, we got to let you go because I got to get to another phone call here before the top of the show. But thank you very much, and call in again. Check your email. I just sent you a message you need to be paying attention to. And we're going to switch over to Billy Bob in Texas. Aloha, Billy Bob. Thank you very much for waiting patiently. I know you've been on the phone for a very, very long time. What's on your mind?
Time went by fast. It's a great show. Aloha, Mike. How are you today?
Thank you very much, and aloha yourself.
I wanted to ask you a question regarding Kucinich and the recent developments in the healthcare debate, but I wanted to just carry on the discussion you were having regarding Iran and Israel and our apparent imminent attack on Iran, and I wanted to kind of ask you your opinion on this. Because this is what I'm thinking. And, you know, Iraq was kind of like, you know, we're going to hit Iraq. Obviously, it's for Israel. Israel's saying, hey, we had nothing to do with it. When it's obvious they did, they were, you know, the driving force behind it. And Iraq shot off some Scuds, and, you know, it was good for the morale of the Iraqi people, but they were highly ineffective. Now you have Iran. And if they're attacked, if we drop whatever, bunker busters, whatever we're planning on dropping on that country, you know, we're talking about the Persians here. And, you know, I think there's going to be very little doubt, and I think this is where the miscalculation is happening. I think Israelis believe that as long as they can plausibly deny that they had anything to do with this upcoming attack, that Iran can't attack them and won't attack them. And I think that's a grave miscalculation. And I think that Iran has not only the means to inflict heavy damage on the state of Israel, but also you have to take in consideration Lebanon and Hezbollah as well as Syria, who have been sitting on the sidelines kind of waiting for their turn to get attacked again in the case of
Lebanon. I don't think it's a miscalculation. I'm sorry. I don't think it's a miscalculation. I think the political theater to de-link Israel from the coming U.S. attack on Iran is so that when, because nobody's going to fool Iran about what's really going on here. So when Iran counterattacks, the U.S. government will turn around to the American people and say, Iran attacked Israel for no reason at all because, you know, we attack Iran and Iran attacks Israel. There was no linkage. Therefore, we must go in and escalate the war to defend poor little Israel from those mean old bad Iranian types. And I think that's the real reason for the theater. Nobody is going to fool any real observers that Israel is not calling the shots here, that Israel is not blackmailing the U.S. government.
Excuse me for interrupting. That's where the difference is here. I don't really think that it matters whether or not the American people go along or heavily protest. You know, the governments are going to make war or make peace whenever they want to do it. What I'm saying to you is...
But it's an election year. Remember, it is an election year. Vote fraud can swing an election 5-10%, but it can't reverse a landslide. If Israel starts a war with Iran, then every American politician who is in Israel's pockets is going to be facing a landslide defeat November and in 2012. And I think that's the reason for all the political theater.
Where I'm going with this, I'm talking about the actual end of Israel is what I'm referring to. I'm talking about the one thing that nobody thought could ever happen, being that they're the fourth or third greatest army in the world with nuclear capability, able to hit most of Europe with their nuclear warheads. You know, despite all that, you're talking about a relatively small piece of real estate.
Half the size of New Jersey.
Yeah, and, you know, you're talking about really wiping them off the face of the earth. And I'm telling you, in my opinion, based on what I've seen over the last decade of what happened with Iraq, and I think Iran realizes that, you know, obviously we know everybody, like you said, anybody that's been observing the situation and is somewhat knowledgeable about the situation agrees that it's Israel behind this. And if Iran doesn't stand up to them, Lebanon will be next, Syria will be next. It's just a matter of time. It's one domino in front of the other. This may be what the entire Middle East needs as a reason to finally deal Israel a blow, to humble them, to try to bring them into the League of Nations. I don't think they want to become that. I think you're right. I think they're trying to tip off World War III and get everybody to kill each other, and they emerge the leader, the light upon all nations, which is just, you know, just an insane...
Well, they are a little bit arrogant here. I don't think Iran has the capability to inflict that much harm on Israel, simply because Israel has set things up so that Iran is going to have to fight their way through the American forces in Iraq just to reach the borders of Israel. But I do think that if this thing escalates into World War III, I don't think either Russia or China will hesitate to wipe Israel off the map, simply because Israel's not going to be able to retaliate, and the United States of America, I don't think, will go to total nuclear Armageddon to protect little tiny Israel. I think if Russia or China wiped Israel off the map, and it would take only one of the really big nukes that Russia has, Israel would be gone, and the United States would say, well, I'm sorry they're gone here, but hey, you know, no more blackmail, no more manipulation. We can go back to taking care of our own people. You know, thanks a lot, Russia and China.
A rainbow would appear over the world, over the horizon. I mean, it would be a new day for the world.
Yes, it would be.
I wanted to get your opinion on Kucinich, because, you know, him and Dr. Paul and, you know, these guys that, you know, I always fear putting my enthusiasm behind, because they're just one payoff away from totally betraying you. But, you know, these are two guys that spoke openly and confidently, stating everything that was on your website, reallyhappened.com, and all the other, you know, libertarian movements. And I'm just curious what your thoughts on his comments were this afternoon. Do you think that, you know, he got either sold out or blackmailed, or do you think he just sincerely believes that if he doesn't put his weight behind this, we're not going to get nothing? And do you think, let me just expand on that, as somebody who doesn't have health insurance, somebody who's in his mid-30s, who has a pre-existing condition, has many pre-existing conditions, including asthma and whatnot, what will the present, I mean, I'm not familiar with the present health care bill that they're
talking about. Okay, we're almost to the end here. You got to get to the point.
I wanted to ask you what your thoughts on his comments were and what your thoughts on the current bill in debate are.
Okay, I think the current bill absolutely sucks. It's just another excuse to loot the American public for the benefit of insurance corporations. The bill is all about money. It's not about health at all. It's another scam by a government that is desperate to force us to spend money to prop up a failed economic system. As far as Kucinich is concerned, I don't think he sincerely believes, you know, what he's talking about. I think he got bought or blackmailed into changing his vote. I mean, look at Nancy Pelosi. I mean, she's trying to pull this slaughter movement. They're desperate to pass this thing in an election year, and, you know, they play dirty. All right, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. Stay tuned, and aloha, America.
What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show today here. And I want to sort of set our way back machine, not too far back, actually just a week ago. The first week in March, Newsweek had a cover, Victory at Last. And it basically, it was marking the seventh anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. 2,555 days. Wow, it's a very long time. It's longer than World War II. That's how long we've been in Iraq. We've been in Iraq that long. And, of course, I mean, there was that whole embarrassment about mission accomplished and all these other things. We've been hearing all along that, you know, one more push, one more surge, one more this, one more that, and we'll be done. Now, the whole point of this story was that this last election in Iraq is proof that the war has borne the fruits of a true democracy in that nation. And supposedly this wipes out all of the blood and torture and all of everything else that preceded it. It's a nice little fiction here, except that Iraq had elections before we invaded. Iraq was the only secular government in the region, the only one not dominated by Islamic fanatics. And we've heard this story before because there have been elections since the U.S. invaded. And every time there's an election and people walk around with their little purple thumbs and they say, oh, say, democracy is here. And everybody says, okay, well, if democracy is here, let's bring our kids home. And there's always a reason not to. But the reason I brought this up now is looking at this Victory at Last cover on Newsweek. And looking at all this talk about how we're about ready to go in and finish the job in Afghanistan and we're going to do blah, 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 it occurred to me this is part of the war preparations, because before Obama can order a new war into Iran, he has to trick the American people into thinking that the already ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, if not actually over, are just about there. Rest assured, yeah, we got to stop Iran. We got to start killing people in Iran a little bit sooner than we wanted. But trust us, you know, we'll be out of Iraq and Afghanistan here in a couple of weeks. Not going to happen. I can almost imagine that Hitler told the German people the same thing. Yeah, we're invading France, but don't worry, we're going to be out of Poland here any minute now. We'll be getting out of Austria now that we've taken care of that problem. I don't think so. It's just more war propaganda. And as I said before, what has got me thinking along these lines is this report from a apparently originating in a Scottish magazine that the U.S. government has shipped something like 400 bunker buster bombs to Diego Garcia. Now, the bunker busters are the ones that are designed to destroy deep underground installations. They are basically, the first ones, I don't know if they're still doing this, the first ones were literally made out of artillery barrels to make them strong enough to be able to penetrate into concrete to reach down deep into the earth to basically blow up, you know, the name bunker busters. Basically, they drill deep underground before they detonate. And it is speculated that many of these bunker busters are actually tactical nuclear weapons. Nobody's saying one way or the other. But when you talk about the task of what a bunker buster is supposed to do and how little room is left inside that heavy metal casing, the idea that they may be a tactical nuke, it was admitted at one point back when Bush was in office that they were building a new generation of bunker busters that were tactical nuclear devices. So we may be going in and seeing that. But it looks to me like this whole story about Israel and the U.S. having this diplomatic split is really just political cover so that Israel can deny any responsibility when the U.S. goes in and starts the war with Iran. And because it is an election year. And vote fraud only gets you so far. And AIPAC campaign money only gets you so far. And right now there's a tremendous anti-incumbency and anti-Israeli influence fever running through the United States of America. If Obama attacks Iran, which it seems he's being ordered to do by Israel, and Israel is seen as being the initiator, it's just going to make matters worse for American politicians who are working for Israel here in the United States of America. So I think this is all political theater to give Israel and its supporters in the United States deniability. Oh, no, no, Obama just attacked Iran all on his own because of their nuclear weapons. They don't have any nuclear weapons. It's the same thing that we went through with Iraq. Israel says, go kill them for us. The U.S. government says, yes, master. And American tax dollars and American blood flows into the sands of the Mideast yet again. And if the U.S. goes in and destroys Iran, it won't stop there. And that's the realization we all have to deal with. It didn't stop with Iraq. It won't stop with Afghanistan. It won't stop with Iran. After that, it'll be Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And it will be everybody that Israel does not like in the region. Israel has an absolute lock on the U.S. government. They're blackmailing our government over 9/11. And as long as they're able to do that, the United States will spend the rest of our lifetimes attacking Israel's enemies around the world. That is the future that is looming over us right now. The wrinkle in that plan is that so far China and Russia have been playing Neville Chamberlain. They're appeasing. All right, let them go in and bomb Iraq. Nobody liked them anyway. Well, let them go into Afghanistan. Let them go to whatever. But at some point, they're going to say, okay, we have to draw a line somewhere. And that line is probably going to be in Iran. And that is, you know, and I don't care about the Iranians. I get all kinds of hate emails saying, if you love Iranians so much, why don't you move there and everything like that. I don't care about the Iranians. I don't care about Ahmadinejad. I care about the United States of America. And I am telling you that if we get into World War III, we are going to lose it. Now, the bankers behind all of this, they don't care. They don't care who wins or loses a war because both sides go deeply into debt. And debt is what gives the bankers control over the rest of the world. Debt is the tool of enslavement of the masses to the private bankers, as long as we believe that it's a legitimate obligation. More and more people are beginning to say, no, it isn't. The Icelandics already did it. The people in Thailand are doing it. The people in Greece are doing it. We, the people, are not responsible for the debts of a government that wages war without our permission. I mean, if you just step back and think about it objectively, it's like the mayor of your town decides he's going to drop napalm all over the city, you know, down the hill. And he borrows money to do it and turns around and says, you got to repay the loan. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? It was a criminal action. And we don't pay for criminal actions. Every time you sign a census form or a tax form or an application or any paperwork for the government, you are signing a confession that you are supporting the war crimes of the United States federal government. And it's time to stop. It's time to stop. I know we've got a couple of callers. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take one call before the end of the break. Rich in Missouri. Aloha, Rich. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I've been listening to you for quite a while. I really enjoy your show, especially when you detour into science. That's a big popular topic with me. But I was wondering if you had considered the possibility that there was something unusual about American and Israeli culture that lent itself to the creation of passive and obedient psychopaths.
We've touched on the topic about abuse syndrome, where governments abuse their people until they start reacting the way that, like, abused spouses do or abused children, where the idea is they keep going along with whatever the abusing authority says in the hope that the abuse won't get any worse. But the reason that doesn't work past a certain point is we all know when you look at abusive relationships that the abuse continues and continues to get worse. And at some point, you have to strike back. And I think we're kind of at that point. The Greeks are certainly at that point. The Thais are certainly at that point. The Icelandic people are certainly at that point. It is inevitable. It will come to the United States sooner or later. There's going to be a backlash. You know, I hate to see violence come to the United States of America, but at this point, I don't see any way to avoid it. I really, really don't.
There's something that you may not have considered. There is really something unique about both Israel and the United States that is separates us from most of the rest of the world.
And that real quick,
obstetrical abuse.
Okay, well, we'll look into that. We got to let you go. We're at the end of the segment, and thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And joining us for the rest of the show, we have a brand new board op named Don. So when you call us at 866-582-9933, Don will be answering the phone. And I was telling him, welcome to the asylum, you know, otherwise known as Stutter Island over here on Oahu. And we're going to go back to the phones. Peter in Los Angeles. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Michael. You were talking earlier about AIPAC. Can you update me on that real quick? I have a comment on that, but about them being forced to register or propose?
The Department of Justice has been formally petitioned to force them to register as an agent for a foreign government. I don't think it's going to happen. As I said, I think this is political theater to try and manufacture the illusion that the U.S. and Israel have this huge diplomatic gulf between them, so that when the U.S. starts stomping on Iran, Israel's got deniability and say, us? No, we had nothing to do with it. What are you bothering us for?
Well, I definitely agree. Nothing's going to come of it. I mean, I don't even know what the big to-do about this is anyways. The thing with Biden, they spit in our face daily. They've been doing it for 50 years.
Yes, they have, and it's gotten worse since 9/11.
And if Kennedy couldn't get them to register in 1963, and now you're talking about the banks, all of whom are you know, I hate to point this out, but they're all Jewish.
Yes.
Every one of them, Bernanke, you know, I mean, Greenspan,
Geithner,
all the
Bernie Madoff with the loot.
It's absolutely controlled, and I'm sure it's related to the lobby. But nevertheless, the Congress loves these things. When Israel makes a big mistake like that, Congress loves it. There's a hue and cry, and they're already bought and paid for, but now they get to put their hand out for a little more to help it make it go away.
Well, it's not just the handout. It's not just the handout. We have an election coming up in November. We have another election in 2012 that's going to be hotly contested. And there is a huge anti-incumbent and anti-Israel fever among the electorate. And so right now, anybody who's planning on running for office, like I think Hillary's going to go up against Obama in 2012, they're having to adopt a public posture of not being all that cozy with Israel, because being really close with Israel is going to be seen as a negative in the coming elections.
Well, I hope that's the case, but you and I both know how elections go and how they rig them, and they also that, you know, money doesn't talk, it screams. And but this is an opportunity for the midterm elections coming up for Congress to, already having accepted, you know, tons of money from the lobby, to put their hand out again to make this particular thing go away. It's just another opportunity for them to make a little extra they hadn't counted on.
I'm sure that's probably going to be part of the exploitation. But again, the problem is the danger is holding that hand out and being seen to hold that hand out could come back to as a huge backlash. They could be hoisting with their own petard there.
I hope you're right, Michael. But I've never been disappointed in my theory that you never underestimate the stupidity of the American voting public.
Well, I tend to agree, except that we're more and more seeing the American public turn away from corporate media and to the blogs and the alternative media. I mean, you know, ABC's having to shut down all their news bureaus across the country. They're having really hard times over there. They've lost the ability to trick the American people into believing what they're ordered to believe. The polls consistently show trust in the corporate media and trust in the government are at an all-time low. Now, yes, we have epidemic vote fraud in this country, but vote fraud is only good for a 5 to 10 percentage point shift. You can't reverse a landslide with vote fraud, or everybody knows that's exactly what happened. And more Americans are understanding that in other countries, every time the exit polls don't match the official results, that's seen as evidence of vote fraud. Only in the United States do they come out with this lame-o excuse that, oh, well, I guess the voters were lying to the exit pollers, which is nonsense. Why would they bother lying? It's not like they know the exit pollers. It's not like the exit pollers are taking their names down. It's one of the stupidest pieces of propaganda I've ever heard. And yet, that's what passes for news on the American corporate media, which, again, is why the corporate media is losing their audience, and their audience is coming over to right here.
Well, I hope you're right. I don't think that's moving fast enough, but I hope you're right. I see this as, you know, like Hillary Clinton is speaking at AIPAC.
Yes, she's the headline speaker.
She's the headline speaker. I think Netanyahu is speaking there as well.
Mm-hmm.
All the people, who's it, Huckabee or whatever, they all, that's their initial campaign stop is going to tell
them. That's exactly right. The fact that Hillary is the keynote speaker at AIPAC is signaling the world she's getting ready for another run in 2012.
Yeah, and it's obligatory. As a matter of fact, it became kind of the cool thing to do a couple of years ago. I think Hillary started it when she ran for Senate, digging up a Jewish relative in her past and declaring Jewish. John Kerry did the same thing.
Yeah, it's become required, along with a trip to Israel to basically, you know, daven to whoever's in charge in Tel Aviv and say, I will be a friend of Israel, because that guarantees millions and millions of dollars of campaign donations. The problem is now getting that kind of money from pro-Israel interests can be used by the opponents to say, look, I don't have as much money for advertising, but, you know, my opponent is taking all this money from a known organization that is spying on the Americans for a foreign government. You know, I think the motto, the slogan going into this election, I've been saying this for a while, is America needs leaders who put America first, second, and third. If you're waving the flag of Israel, you've got no business in the Capitol building.
I got 2 points to make on that. One is I look for them. Yeah, I think there is going to be more and more. There is a growing backlash against it, but it's still, I think, too small. But nevertheless, it's growing. And
war with Iran would accelerate the process.
And the Republicans and the Democrats are both completely bought and paid for. What the reaction I expect to see is for them to limit even the third and the constitutional party and whatever. Limit their participation on a ballot as much as they can so that they can't even get votes.
Well, they already have. Look what they did to Ron Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
Ron Paul had the most grassroots support of any candidate going into the primary season, and you know, he was robbed during the primaries and literally blocked from getting on the convention floor. Now we're finding out he actually had more delegates than the party wanted to admit to. I mean, absolutely, both parties are completely corrupt. Like I said, looking at the Republicans and the Democrats, anarchy is looking really attractive right now.
Yeah, and Ron Paul was at least he's a Republican, and they still ostracized him.
Because he wasn't in favor of the wars, and he wasn't in favor of continued davening to Israel.
But the way we cover our campaigns, Mike, is all mainstream media. It's them stopping and stomping here and stomping there and all little sound bites and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, I don't see the Internet, which I hope to have eventually will be our savior. I don't see that really encroaching on the day-to-day barrage of crap that we're going to get from the mainstream media.
Well, I disagree with you. I disagree with you. The latest polls are that most Americans are getting their political news from the Internet now, and I think it really is. We are at that turning point. Otherwise, the government wouldn't be so afraid of the net and coming out with all these laws about locking up dissidents and the rest of it. Those are fear reactions. Thanks a lot for the phone call, Peter. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here.
Aloha, America. My goodness, the day is just going by so fast and so many calls, and I got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm going to have to take him to tomorrow. During the break, a reader sent in an email confirming what I said before. The United States government does have bunker buster bombs that are nuclear. The designation is the B-61-11. They're estimated to have a yield up to 400 kilotons. And they are designed to basically burrow deep underground and detonate. And, you know, there is a ready-made propaganda device. Because let's say the United States goes into Iran and starts dropping these nuclear bunker busters. Now, they don't admit they're nuclear. They just say, well, we've got bunker busters. And they're, you know, and they drop them all over. And all of a sudden, plumes of radiation from these nuclear bunker busters start blowing down into Pakistan and India and all those places. And everybody's screaming, what are you doing? We're going to have cancer and leukemia. And the U.S. says, well, by golly, I guess Iran did have a nuclear weapons plant down there. And that's where all the radiation came from. So there's definitely a motive for the U.S. to use these, first of all, to make sure that they get whatever it is they think they're aiming at. And second of all, the radiation leakage coming from the nuclear bunker buster makes a perfect cover to say, well, see, we really did hit a nuclear weapons laboratory there underneath the middle of Tehran or wherever it is they're bombing. Now, all kidding aside, the reality is that in order to forestall a retaliatory strike against U.S. forces in Iraq, Israel itself, U.S. forces in the Gulf, along with bombing Iran's nuclear facilities, the U.S. is going to have to lay waste to Iran's military structure. That means all of their Air Force bases, all of their Army bases, everything. It is going to be all-out, unrestricted war on Iran. Based on a lie, based on an hysterical, paranoid fantasy that Iran is building nuclear weapons which nobody can prove or document at all. And those of you who sat silent when the same lie was used to justify the murder of the Iraqi people and torture and destruction of their society and their cultural treasures, you can't pretend you don't know this time that it's not the same lie all over again. If the U.S. attacks Iran and you remain silent, the blood of the innocent victims is on your hands. And no amount of washing will get it off. Go back and check Lady Macbeth if you want a referral about that. All right, changing subjects here. As you know, there are all these social networking sites. There's Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and all the rest of it. Now, my personal sense is that the volume of traffic on them tends to be slowing down. Certainly Twitter, we have documented that it's become dominated by these automated propaganda machines that have thousands and thousands of bogus user accounts that are used to spam whatever propaganda they're paid to spam all over Twitter. Last summer it was about the pro-democracy coup in Iran, which fell flat on its face. More recently, some of the stuff about ClimateGate, where we busted them for this propaganda stunt that they're pulling off. But latest situation is, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, using the Freedom of Information Act, they got a Justice Department document which outlines the fact that the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, probably NSA, INS, all of them are prowling the social networking sites. And if you're a person of interest, they will send you a thing saying, I'm Joe Smith, I'm just an ordinary person, I want to be your friend. And from that point on, anything you put on your social networking sites is being fed into the computers at these various government spook agencies. Now, the IRS is prowling all the social networking sites. They're looking for anybody who's got a vacation. You know, look at my vacation photos from Tahiti. And the IRS says, we didn't think they had enough money for a vacation in Tahiti. We have to audit that person. And so basically, you need to be very careful what you put out on the social networking sites. It used to be very careful because of identity thieves or stalkers or everything. But the real threat, again, is the U.S. government are using these social networking sites to spy on your personal activities. So if you've got something that you don't want people to be knowing about, you shouldn't be putting it on your Facebook page. Because one of those people that you've signed on to be your friends is probably not your friend at all. And it's just one more indication of the way the net is being hijacked and turned into a tool of control rather than a tool of freedom. Which brings me to a plugin that is available for a lot of the web browsers called Web of Trust. Because I have noticed over the last couple of weeks that when I had Web of Trust in my Firefox browser, and I noticed every time I would go to a website that was critical of Israel, immediately I would get the worst possible score. Web of Trust users have reported that this website is crooked and untrustworthy, and they'll steal things and they'll plant viruses all over your computer. And I'll click ignore warning and go to the site, and my other security will say the site's perfectly okay. And what it is because Web of Trust and a lot of these other so-called, you know, web screeners, because they are quote-unquote user feedback supported. In other words, if you have a website you don't think is very good, you can click on the Web of Trust icon and say, oh, bad site, you shouldn't go there. And so what's obviously going on here is the megaphonies, every time they see a new website that they don't think is very good, they'll go out to Web of Trust and they'll all dogpile on the thing and say, oh, it's a horrible website. And so Web of Trust, possibly without even knowing it, is being turned away from a device to protect you from online scammers and being used as a tool of website censorship. Now, speaking of censorship, the other day we were talking about how Jesse Ventura's article on 9/11 was censored by the Huffington Post. And the Huffington Post's official position is, we deleted it because we do not allow posts that promote conspiracy theories. Now, at the time, I said my problem with that was that when the Watergate burglary first became news and there were allegations that it extended right back to the committee to reelect President Nixon and that extended far beyond the simple burglary of the Watergate itself, that was dismissed as a conspiracy theory. And so had Huffington Post been around back then, they would have missed the story of the century because it started out as a conspiracy theory. Well, the bottom line here is that Huffington Post's censorship of Jesse Ventura has backfired. And Huffington Post is now being seen as an online equivalent to the controlled corporate media. And, you know, somebody wrote an article where they're talking about, let's see, that Huffington Post, what is important to the Huffington Post? Adam Lambert has a bulge at his crotch. The world's shortest man recently died. Jessica Simpson says men are undressing her with their eyes. Huffington Post has become a tabloid. They're not giving you the news you need to know. Remember Rivero's definition of the news. News is what affects your life directly. Everything else is tabloid distraction. Tiger Woods, I mean, this whole last 4 or 5 days, you turn on a regular corporate news show, Tiger Woods this and Tiger Woods that, and is he coming back too soon? And who cares? Tiger Woods makes his living batting a ball around with a stick. It doesn't impact my life. Israel's ordering of the demolition of a mosque in Palestine potentially affects all of us because it's a provocation intended to provoke the Palestinians into another action that can justify another cast lead and push the world closer to World War III. Okay? So, Huffington Post, I think they've shot themselves down. And good. Good riddance. The corporate phony media has got to go away. There are bloggers and there are floggers. What's a flogger? A phony blogger. And we need to get rid of the floggers. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit.
tonight. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we've only got one segment left, so I want to talk a little bit about the economy, because it does continue to be that piece of the news that does impact your life every single day. Now, we're starting to get warnings from the credit ratings agencies that the U.S. government's credit rating is in serious trouble and could drop. And it's not a trivial situation, because it makes the cost of borrowing money by the U.S. government go way, way up. And, of course, the U.S. government doesn't care, because they're just going to stick us with the bill anyway. But basically, we're starting to get warnings from these ratings agencies that the austerity moves that are required to preserve the U.S. government's credit rating could trigger riots. And, of course, we're seeing riots all around the world, Thailand and Greece. The Icelanders threw out one government. They're getting ready to throw out another one. Because more and more around the world, people are beginning to understand it's not our responsibility that Wall Street got carried away with their greed. Why are we to be punished for the crimes of Wall Street? And the answer is, they'll do it as long as you let them get away with it. And more people are saying it's time to draw a line in the greenbacks and say, look, no more. No more. You made the mess without our permission. You clean it up without our help. We have a right to say no. We're supposed to be a free people. And there is no freedom without the freedom to say no. And we, the American people, need to stand up, and the national strike's a good time to do it, to stand up and say, no, we will not be lied to anymore. No, we will not be tricked into any more wars. No, we are not going to allow our money to be taken away from us and given to private corporations to save themselves from their own stupidity. No, no, no. When one American stands up and says no, the tyrant begins to fear and tremble. And that's exactly where we are right now. That's why we're seeing all these laws being proposed where dissidents can be rounded up as a threat to the state and locked up indefinitely without trial and without constitutional rights. That's how afraid they are. We have a coffee cup we sell around here. The fastest way to bring down a dictatorship is to force them to act like one where everybody can see it. And it's happening right now. All right, moving right along here. Let's see. Obviously, a big economic impact for all of us is the so-called Obamacare. They keep saying, we've got enough votes, we've got enough votes, and then the whip will go around and say, no, we don't. Sorry, we don't. And so we've got this Obamacare, and they're trying to get it through Congress, and they're trying to get it through in a way that it is not going to be a political liability for those members of Congress who are up for re-election in November. And so Nancy Pelosi is attempting to use this trick called the Slaughter Amendment, where instead of voting on Obamacare, they can vote on another bill, and in that bill is a provision that deems the Obamacare proposal to have passed the House. Now, this is absolutely not constitutional. Check Article 1, Section 7. You're not allowed to basically deem anything. And yet Pelosi is trying to do this. And the reason is very simply that a lot of people in the House of Representatives are looking at the November elections and realizing that if they vote for this Obamacare, which is just a giveaway to the health insurance companies who were campaign donors, they understand there's going to be a voter's backlash. They've seen the town hall meetings and how ugly they're getting. They've seen the tea parties. They understand there's a huge anti-incumbency vote. They want to be able to go before their constituents and say, I didn't vote for Obamacare. Yeah, but you voted for this other bill that deemed it to have passed. Well, there were other things in there we needed to get done. That kind of political cover. That's all it's about, political cover. But you see, under the constitutional system, those representatives in Washington, D.C., they're supposed to represent us. Not Israel, not the health insurance companies, not the pharmaceutical companies. They're supposed to be there to represent us. And they're not doing it. They're not doing it. When you get right down to it, Obamacare's sole purpose is to force us all to buy health insurance, whether we can afford it or not. And if we could afford it, we'd already have it. But this is going to force a choice on us whether we're going to pay for health insurance, government-mandated health insurance, or buy food for our family. It's going to create instant criminals of people purely because they're too poor to balance their budgets right now. That's what this is really all about. And the voters understand this. This health bill is not about health. It's about money. The federal government is so broke, they have to somehow raise tax revenues. If they order all of us to start buying health insurance, then the health insurance companies are going to make huge profits, out of which the federal government starts getting tax revenues. They get a piece of the action here. We're going to order everybody to buy your product, and we get a piece of the action back in tax revenues. The U.S. government was counting on Copenhagen to bring carbon taxes to this country. Didn't happen. ClimateGate, it basically destroyed the whole global warming cult. They're trying to figure out some way they can get carbon taxes or pollution reduction taxes, whatever they're going to call it. The federal government's only solution to their problem is to somehow take more money from you. What they don't understand, because our government is made up of people who are millionaires. Nancy Pelosi is worth $500 million. They don't understand we have run out of money. The Federal Reserve created a system to suck all the money out of the society and put it in their own pockets. And nobody planned what to do on that day they succeeded. The problem with the Federal Reserve Bank is the instant that first Federal Reserve note went into circulation, more money is owed to the banks than is actually in existence. That's the problem. All of the money has gotten sucked back to the banks, and there's still trillions of dollars of debt sitting on the federal government. So what's the federal government do? Well, we'll just turn over to the voters and the taxpayers, and we'll just come up with more taxes. We're going to tax donuts and hotels. We're going to tax this. We're going to tax that. And our problems will be solved. Because, heck, we've got lots of money. We can afford the new taxes, so obviously so can the rest of America. That's their blindness. That is their blindness. They don't understand that when they reach those talons out there to scrape in a few more gold coins, all they're going to get are wood shavings because they've hit the bottom of the barrel. The system is headed for a horrendous crash. And our government is not doing any of the things that would be consistent with trying to turn the situation around. It's all about grab more money, grab more money, grab more money, grab more money. Sucking up to Israel all these years, our government has picked up some very bad attitudes regarding other people's money. And it shows. It really, really does. Now, speaking of Nancy Pelosi, little bit of history here. When she's up there saying that I want Obamacare to take care of you, I don't think so. Okay. Nancy Pelosi's home district is in San Francisco. Starkist Tuna's headquarters are in San Francisco, Pelosi's home district. Starkist is owned by Del Monte Foods, who is a major contributor to Nancy Pelosi. Starkist is the major employer in American Samoa. They employ 75% of the Samoan workforce. 3 out of 4 Samoans work for Starkist Tuna. Paul Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi's husband, owns millions of dollars worth of Starkist stock. In January 2007, when the minimum wage in the United States was increased from $5.15 an hour to $7.25 an hour, Nancy Pelosi had American Samoa exempted from the increase in the minimum wage, so Del Monte would not have to pay more money for the workers. This would make Del Monte products less expensive than their competitors. They could sell more product. The Starkist stock that her husband owns goes up. Starkist in her district is happy. Del Monte contributes to her campaign for the next election. This is how politics are done in America. Our Congress is for sale to the highest bidder. And it's usually a corporation or Israel. And that is why our nation is in the mess that it's in. So don't believe Nancy Pelosi when she says that whatever she's doing is for your benefit. It never has been. It never will be. That's it for our show today. We're going to be back tomorrow, Thursday, I think, if I don't get a call from the production office. So until then, stay safe, stay well, stay angry, stay skeptical. Thank you for tuning into our show today and calling in and sharing all of that good information with us. We'll be back tomorrow, and aloha, America.